Well, turn to Daniel chapter 4. We'll be brief tonight. I say that all the time. Doesn't always make it so, but I say it all the time. My intentions are good. We're only going to cover three verses this evening, 1-3. And really, most commentators think that these first three verses could be put at the end of this chapter. The title of the message tonight is A King Meets God. A King Meets God. I told you when we first began this series that I believe that Nebuchadnezzar became a believer. It took him decades for that to happen. But I think that that in this chapter, we see this just because of the words that he uses, the things that he says. So verses 1-3, it's really kind of like a preamble to the chapter, but it is a summary of what takes place that he tells and what we learn from his life. And it's really the last 10 years of his reign. When we got to chapter 2, we saw that Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. When we got to chapter 3, it was probably 20 years later when the three Hebrew children were placed in the fiery furnace. And so it had been over 20 years since that first dream, and he still was not saved. And there's been some more things that have transpired. And now, from the beginning of Daniel to chapter 4, it's probably about 50 years. We have a tendency sometime, and I know I do the same thing. When I read through the Bible, I have a tendency to think that it was a day here, a day there, a day here, a day there. But in reality, there may be 10 or 20 years between just one or two verses. And so that's what we see in this passage. So chapter 2, we have a dream. 20 years later, we have a furnace. 50 years later from the beginning, we are about to have another dream. But before we get to that, we see the result of all of this coming together. If I were to use a New Testament analogy, I would say that this man would come to Jesus late. And I do believe that there are people that come to Jesus late. It's not wise to wait, but they do come late. Almost sound like Johnny Cochran or one of the OJ lawyers. We need to look at this from what the man has to say, and we look and we listen to his words, and I think you'll come to the same conclusion that I have. We've got the chapter that we are now beginning that has three major divisions. The first division is not the introduction that we're going to talk about tonight. The next time that we're in Daniel, we will see a dream. It is not like the first dream. You remember the first dream. It had a huge image that was 90 feet tall. It was 9 feet wide. It had a gold head. It had silver chest and arms. It had a bronze midsection. It had iron legs, and feet was iron mixed with clay. And a stone came out of the heavens and crushed the feet. That's what we saw in that first dream. This dream that we're going to see beginning the next time will be a different kind of dream. And so we will look at that in the future, possibly next Sunday night. And so I want us to look at verse number 1. And the first thing that I want you to see is I want you to see that there is a heart that is now at peace. Very few people really have a peaceful heart. A lot of times we have hearts that are anxious. We have hearts that are sinful. We have hearts that are prideful. The great C.S. Lewis made this statement. He said, "There is a sin that is the great sin. It is a sin that we all struggle with. We loathe that sin in other people. We look upon it with disdain, and yet it's a battle that we all face. And only a few Christians are able to identify it in their own lives. He did not say all Christians could identify it. He said only a few Christians could identify it. And what was that? It was the sin of pride. When you read through the first three chapters of Daniel, you find a king that is prideful. You find a king that has conquered Judah. And if he conquered in ancient times, that meant that your God was better and bigger than the people you conquered's God. And so when Daniel talks about his God in those early years, when Daniel was just a teenager, Nebuchadnezzar didn't really have much use for that, because after all, you know, he was the big kahuna. He was the one that was large and in charge. He was the most powerful man in the known world. He was the one that would speak and everybody jumped to attention and did what he wanted. And that was his life. And that's the life of really people in power for the most part. I don't care who it is. You know, it can be a mayor of a city. It can be a governor of a state. It can be a president of a nation. And because they have the authority, they began to believe their own press clippings and not realize that they really can be humbled pretty quickly. Proverbs tells us that pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Nebuchadnezzar is going to experience that in spades in our chapter. The first division that I mentioned was the dream that he's going to have. The second division that we will get to two sermons from now is the interpretation of that dream. And then the third one, which is the one that I am really looking forward to, that is when his insanity and his repentance kicks in. He's going to go nuts for 7 years. He's going to be walking around out in the pasture lands. He'll be on all fours. He's not going to let his hair be cut. He's not going to cut his toenails or his fingernails. He's going to munch down on grass. And by the way, there is an actual disease that is about. And he's fully nuts for 7 years. I read a humorous story about a man that was kind of crazy. He thought that somebody was under his bed every night. And I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, I had those thoughts. I can't tell you the number of nights that just before I'd go to sleep, I wouldn't put my feet on the ground. I'd lean over the bed and I'd look under the bed. Why? I don't know. I guess because I'd heard those Bill Cosby jokes that he used to tell, you know, things like, you know, the one about Noah and the ark. Well, one of them was about somebody underneath his bed. And so I guess this guy maybe had those same stories told to him. And as he got to be a grown man, it got worse and worse. And he just, every time he would wake during the night, he would lean over and he would look under the bed. So finally he realized, you know, this is just not right. He said, I've got to go and talk to somebody. So he went to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist told him, said, yes, I can help you. He said, but what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to come to see me 25 sessions, and each session is going to cost $200. And so man said, all right. Well, he was not a wealthy man, and he got to thinking about it. Well, the next thing you know, he just didn't show up. And so the psychiatrist and his wife were walking, and he saw this man, and he said, oh, sir, you were supposed to come and spend, you know, 25 sessions with me. And the man said, oh, said, don't worry about it. Said, I've been healed. I don't need to come for 25 sessions at $200 an hour. Said, well, what did you do? He said, well, I had a friend that was a carpenter. And he come over and he took his saw and he cut the four legs off the bed. And now nobody can get under there. And so Nebuchadnezzar for 7 years is going to be basically living like animals in the pasture. And we'll see that three messages from now. But tonight we are looking at a heart that's at peace. Look with me at verse 1. Nebuchadnezzar the king unto all people. Now remember, Daniel is normally the guy that's speaking, but he's using Nebuchadnezzar's words. These are the words from the most powerful man in the known world. The king unto all people, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied unto you. Does that not sound like a believer? How many times does Paul say in one of his epistles, or one of the general epistle writers such as Peter or James, do they not talk about peace a lot? And here you've got a man that is a heathen, but something has happened to him. There is a peace that he's wanting other people to have because it's a peace that he's got. Well, what is the situation that he is in? Well, look at verse number 4. I'll just simply touch on this to prove my point tonight. But in verse number 4, he says, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in mine house. Now, that can be taken two ways. When you're at rest in your house, that simply means that maybe the sun has gone down and you have decided to retire for the night. But it also can mean that there is no turmoil in your house. It means that there is no trouble that's in your house. And I'm telling you, when my house is at peace, my heart is at peace. And you probably can think of those same times. I can think of times when my children were teenagers. And sometimes they would frustrate me to no end. And I know none of you ever had problems like that. But there were times when I just wanted to strangle somebody. Fortunately, I didn't, because at the time, capital punishment was a big deal. But when you're anxious, when there's things that just agitate and things that irritate, you know, it's just, there's nothing that you seem to be able to just rest. And you lay there and you toss and you turn on the bed. Well, he is at rest. There are no more enemies. Nebuchadnezzar has subdued and put the fear of God in all these other nations. Nobody is willing at this time, the last 10 years of his reign, nobody is willing to challenge him. And so it's a time of peace. It's much like when David was coming to the end of his reign. He had subdued all the nations around him. And when he died, he handed that throne over to Solomon, and it was a time of peace. Now, after Nebuchadnezzar dies, which we will get to in the future, after he dies, his grandson is going to become the leader of Babylon. It'll be short-lived. Nobody's scared of his grandson, but they are scared of Nebuchadnezzar because he has proved that he can subdue. And so he is at rest. Next time, whenever we begin to look at this dream, what are we going to see? We're going to see that it was a time of peace and prosperity. I mean, you're going to have all of these huge branches that go out from this tree, and all the beasts of the field, they're going to be underneath it, and the fowls of the air are going to be in its branches, and there's going to be just success, and there's going to be prosperity that's everywhere. But that'll change. But we see this man, and he is at a time of peace. But when he uses that little phrase there, peace be multiplied unto you, I think that it's that he has finally gotten peace with God. When God gets on your trail, he's going to win. Just remember that. I've known of people that they would say, I don't care what God does, I will not bow to him. And all I'm thinking is, he'll take you out in the first round. That's all it's going to be. I mean, you're going to think that, you know, you're this and you're that, and the next thing you know, you're going down. I remember back in the 70s, one of my favorite boxers was Joe Frazier, Smoking Joe Frazier. Every time he fought Muhammad Ali, I wanted him to knock Ali's head off. That's what I wanted. Well, after they had fought, one of the next bouts that Smoking Joe had was against George Foreman. You know, the guy that had the hamburger cookers? You know, what was that called? Somebody got to know that. George Foreman Grill. That's what it is. Named after George, all right? And you know what? I had one of those at one time. I don't know what happened to it, but we had one. And I'm telling you, that thing would do good. I mean, it had a little tilted plate, little table to it, had little raised ribs on it. And when them hamburgers had cooked, that grease would just run down and get in that little tray that was on the front of it. And I'm telling you, you could take a bun and you could rub it in that grease and eat it, and it was good. I mean, it was good. George Foreman is fighting my favorite fighter at the time, Joe Frazier. And I'm thinking, Smoking Joe's going to get in tight, and that big guy, he's not going to be able to really get leverage. And you know what happened in that fight? George Foreman knocked him down 6 times in 2 rounds. Finally, they stopped the fight. I mean, every time they got ready to tussle, Foreman would hit him and down go Frazier. 6 times in 2 rounds. Frazier never stood a chance. His son Marvis Frazier, he decided he wanted to follow in his dad's footsteps. First time I remember him fighting, he went down fast, and they asked him, said, Marvis, what happened? He said, he hit me upside my head. That's what happened. You get in it with God, you going down fast. That's just the bottom line. Nebuchadnezzar, he fought the good fight, but at last he gave himself over to God. He had a heart that was at peace with God. And can I tell you that that's where it all begins for you, and that's where it all begins for me. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God. Romans 5, verse 1. And you and I, we need to realize that peace with God is a big deal. That's why we seize the day in walking with God. That's why we want to make sure that we are in fellowship with God. Why? Because when we are in sweet fellowship, there's peace. Let me give you a second thing about peace. When you have peace with God, that gives you the ability to have peace with others. I love it when brethren dwell together in peace. I don't know of anybody that I've got an ought against tonight. I don't know of anybody that's got an ought against me. I may have somebody, but I don't know it. And you and I, we ought to want to be at peace with other people. We ought to want to be around God's people. We ought to love God's people. We ought to enjoy each other. And as a church, there ought to be a unity that we have where that we really kind of prefer other people above ourselves. And so our peace with God extends to peace with other people. And what do we have here? We've got a man that says, peace be multiplied unto you. He is giving this edict. That's the decree that we read back in the end of chapter 3. He is giving this edict. And who's he giving it to? All people, all nations, all languages that dwell in all the earth. Peace be multiplied to you. Let me give you a second thought tonight. There's a testimony that is personal. Every one of us have a personal testimony. I'm about to add to my personal testimony in about 12 days. What is the adding to that? I'm going to be able to add that I have been saved 50 years. It's not almost 50. It's not I've been saved 49. I've been saved 50 years, and that will be able to be added to my testimony June the 11th. Why is that important to me? Because I want people to know my story. The young man that I led to Christ yesterday down in Brunswick, I wanted him to know where I came from. I wanted him to know that just as he was a sinner, so I was a sinner. And just because he had spent time in prison and I had not spent time in prison did not make me any better than him. I was a sinner that was lost and on my way to hell. And I had a story to tell. And so Nebuchadnezzar has a story to tell. And so you have a story to tell if you know Jesus. It may be that it could have been when you were in high school and you heard a preacher preach, and maybe you heard, when you heard him preach, you never forgot his name. I was reading a testimony. I had a text message that came in this morning from a girl that grew up in this church. And she was asking me if I knew how to get in touch with so-and-so. And then she sent me a text, and I'm sitting on a platform and I'm reading my Dick Tracy watch. And she's talking about how she was blessed to have been raised in this church and the preaching of Brother Don, and how that Brother Tommy and Brother Buddy helped her memorize scripture, whether it be in Sunday school or whether it be in a camp or on a WANA program. And she was talking about how that her life was blessed, and that was her story. And as I heard that story, I'm thinking, that's good. She's still telling people about it. And here she is. She's about 46, 47 years old. And she's got a little girl that's about 5 or 6 years old. And she's teaching that little girl the Word of God. And all I'm thinking is, great, what a wonderful story. But you have a story. Just like this girl that lives in South Carolina, and just like I do, and just like Nebuchadnezzar did, you've got a story. And you know what she remembered? She remembered when she got saved. She said, I remember that everybody from the church, we took a great number of people downtown. And you know what it was? At the old Atlanta Civic Center, there was a Sword of the Lord conference that Dr. John R. Rice was putting on. And she was sitting there, and as a six-year-old girl, she put her faith and trust in Jesus Christ, and she never got over it. That's part of her story. She remembers that revival, that citywide revival in Atlanta. You know, I remember that. I remember going to that every night, but I didn't remember her being saved at it. You know, but you know, everybody's got a story. And when you hear that, it's like, tell it to me again. I'm almost like a little kid that's heard the three bears 97 times. Tell me about the three bears, Papa. Tell me about Goldilocks, Papa. You know, and whenever you used to try to read those things to them, you know, and you're trying to get through quick and you try to skip pages, they'll say, don't skip no pages. They know you're skipping. Hey, when you're telling your story, tell it all. Just tell it all. And you ought to be able to tell your story in such a cliff note fashion that within 2 minutes, you ought to be able to tell somebody how you met Jesus. And so we see that this testimony was personal. What does he say about his testimony? I thought it good. I thought it good to show the signs and the wonders that the high God. There's a lot of little miniature gods. There's a lot of medium height gods. There's a lot of low gods. But we're talking about the high God. We're not talking about Marmaduke and the gods of Babylon. We're talking about Jehovah. We're talking about Daniel's, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Their God. That's who we're talking about. It's the God that I met. And I thought it good. And it's a good thing for you to share your faith over and over and over and over and over again. Why? Because it keeps you in practice and it gets the word out that other people can have their story just like you do if they come to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. And so he thought it good. He records this as a state document. Now, can you imagine this? I can imagine this. Hope you'd have enough sense to have it written. Let's say that President Biden met Jesus. Now he thinks he knows him. I doubt that seriously. You can't believe in abortion and really know God. Somebody says, "Oh, I believe I'm pro-choice. I believe that you can do abortion and I'm still saved." Your biblical definition of salvation is a little warped. So you've got President Biden, and he gets saved, and all of a sudden, he begins to give a speech from the Oval Office. He says, "I want everybody in the United States to know this, and if you're watching from around the world, I want you to know that I have now put my faith in Jesus Christ. My heart is at peace with God, and I want you to know that your heart can be at peace with God, and I want everybody to know this." You talk about a ruckus that'd be stirred up. That'd be crazy time up in Washington, D.C. The demons of hell would be running all over the place. And so Nebuchadnezzar, the most powerful man at that time, he meets Jehovah. And he says, "I thought it good to show the signs." Well, what are those signs? Well, do you remember back in chapter 2? You had all the magicians. You had the Chaldeans. You had the soothsayers. You had everybody that supposedly were the wise men of Babylon. And he said, "Tell me my dream." "Well, if you'll tell us your dream, then we'll give you the interpretation." And they said, "You don't really think that anybody can do that." He said, "Well, let me tell you, if you don't do it, I'm going to kill you. And that's not fair. I mean, you've got to tell us the dream, then we'll give you the interpretation." And then they come to Daniel, probably to get ready to kill them because they're some of the new kids on the block. And what do they say? "Daniel, let me tell you about the edict. I'm sorry, but we're fixing to have to kill you. Don't be so hasty. God can reveal this." And the next thing you know, Daniel is standing before Nebuchadnezzar. He tells him the dream that he dreamed, and then he tells him the interpretation of the dream. You know what? That's a pretty big sign and a pretty big wonder. 2 decades before this declaration, when he finally meets Jehovah, he's standing at a fiery furnace, and he is filled with that great sin, the sin of pride. "I've built this image. You're going to bow down when you hear the music. And if you don't bow down, we're going to throw you into the furnace." And there's 3 Jews that won't do it. You've got 3 young men, probably in their 30s now. They will not bow down. And he says, "If you don't bow, I'm going to heat this furnace 7 times hotter. You do what you have to do, but we will not bow to that image. We only bow to God." And he is wroth. And he throws them in. And when that furnace door is opened up, the people that are doing the throwing, they are killed. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are not. And then all of a sudden, as they're looking from a distance and looking through those doors at the bottom of that furnace, they see 4 men walking around. And one of them was likened unto one of the sons of God. And he goes, "That was a pretty big sign for me. Now it took me a while to think about it, but with what Daniel taught me and with what I saw in those 3 Hebrews and with what happened to me during these 7 years that I wandered around out in the pasture land," he said, "I've come to the point," he said, "I thought it was good to show you that there were signs and there were wonders that the high God hath wrought toward me." I like the fact that he makes it personal. It was toward him. I'm telling you, I think that when I got saved, I think that God was on my trail. I think that the conviction was great toward me. I wasn't worried about my buddies. I wasn't worried about a girlfriend. I wasn't worried about my ball team. I wasn't worried about school coming up in the fall. The only thing I was thinking about was the fact that I was lost And if I didn't get saved, I was going to hell, and I thought I was getting ready to get on one of the next train loads. I mean, the conviction was great. God was gracious toward me. I'm gonna give you a third thing, and I'll be done tonight. I want you to see that there's a principle that is timeless. Look at verse number 3. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. Do you ever just look at creation and think about the awesomeness of God? Oh, I do. Last week, I sat at a table. I was doing some church work. I was typing the Friday Blast Friday morning early. And I'm just looking out this window, six huge panes of glass that were as big as the double doors in the back there. And I'm seeing that marsh. And I'm seeing the tide as it has come in. And I'm seeing these things, these reeds moving back and forth, and that sawgrass just moving back and forth. And I'm looking at the birds that are flying, and the birds that are walking around out in the mud just trying to grab something and eat it. I'm looking at the Spanish trees or the oaks that are covered with the Spanish moss, and the limbs of them are not straight and out. They're all kind of different angles. And sometimes there's parts of Brunswick and Savannah and other places down in southeast Georgia you can go to, and you'll just see these oak trees and how that they have just grown for literally hundreds of years. And I look at that, and you think, no artist could paint a better picture than what God has created and painted for us for our own eyes. You can look at the ocean, and you can see those waves as they come in, and then you get to thinking, but God has put a boundary on them, and they can only come in so far. They can't come any farther than God allows. And then they go out, but then they come back again. And God has so timed the tides so that it's most beneficial for wildlife and beneficial for us. You go to the mountains, and what do you see? You see God and his canvas and how that he has made just beauty everywhere. And you think about the wonders of God, how that there can be something devastating that can happen. Several years ago, probably 12, 14 years ago, if you were to leave here and go down toward Jackson, Georgia, just before you got to the interstate, what you would have 10, 12 years ago, you would have a swath of nothing but just vegetation. The trees were pretty much clipped off about 15 feet above the ground. A tornado had come by. And I mean, from here, probably to 78 Highway, that wide had just gone down through that part of Georgia and just literally annihilated everything in its path. And yet now, if you were to go down there, you'd be hard-pressed to find where that tornado came through. Why? Because God has let it restore. I remember years ago when the Exxon Valdez sprung a leak, had a drunk captain that basically ran ashore and literally millions and millions of gallons of crude began to go into what was called Prince William Sound. At the time, it was probably the greatest ecological disaster that I know America had ever faced, and maybe the world had ever faced. And there were volunteers that they went and they were up there doing their best to try to clean the place up, and they were taking the wildlife and putting Dawn dishwashing liquid on them, and they were wiping them, and they were washing them off with clean water. And they said, it'll be 50 years before this place is restored. But it wasn't, but just about 3 or 4 years later, when it was pristine again. God allowed the ecosystem to basically repair itself. I don't know why this is funny to me, but there was a group of people that were environmentalists. I love the environment. I think environmentalists are nuts. But you've got a group of environmentalists, and now what are they doing? They're up there, and they have gathered all of these school kids together, and they're celebrating this otter. And this otter had been reclaimed and saved. They had washed this otter. He had gone into captivity, and they were now going to release the otter into the wild. And they let this otter go. I think somebody maybe had even named the otter. And these little kids, 300 or 400 of these school kids, they're there and they're seeing this otter and he's swimming, just doing this, and they're, yeah. He's swimming on his back, you know, he's doing all of this stuff. And then all of the sudden, from somewhere under the deep, an orca comes up and eats the otter. And the kids are screaming. You know why an orca does that? Because they're orcas. They didn't care that those 300 kids were going to be traumatized. But God has created a masterpiece. The signs and the wonders of God are a beauty to behold. And Nebuchadnezzar began to get a glimpse of that. And instead of looking in the mirror and saying how great I am, he began to get a look at how great God was. Sometimes we have to get ourselves out of the way and get other people out of the way to see how great God is. That happened to Isaiah. I think it's chapter 6. The Bible says, in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and lifted up. Uzziah was a hero to Isaiah. But when he died, Isaiah had to begin looking to God and not to people. And when he did that, that's when he saw the Lord in all of his magnificence. And so we see in verse number 3, how great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. And then this is the principle that we should never forget, and I'm done. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion, or the vastness of his authority, is from generation to generation. In other words, every kingdom that has ever existed, whether it be Babylon, whether it be Persia, whether it be Greece, whether it be Rome, or any of the more current groups. Now, we don't have worldwide nations anymore and worldwide empires any longer. But every king that is on a throne today, God allowed it. Every president, God's allowed it. Nothing takes God by surprise. Ultimately, his throne is the throne of thrones. Do we not talk about him being the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords? That's exactly right. And so, you've got Nebuchadnezzar. These three verses could have been placed at the end of our chapter, but he just goes ahead and he gets it out of the way, and he says, in verse number 4, he said, let me tell you how it all started. It would be akin to you and I telling our story and saying, I want you to know that I am a saved, born again, blood washed saint of God, and I'm going to heaven. Now let me tell you how I got here. That's the story of chapter 4.